Episode of the Doster and Deshaun podcast. It is Monday night. It is exactly 11:32 in the PM Eastern Standard Time, the only legitimate time zone. And we are looking at the USC-Kansas game. And Day, I think this one is over. Kansas is down by 33 points with 4 minutes and 37 seconds left. I don't think they're coming back. I think we can safely fire up the stream and start talking about the weekend in review. So what's going on, man? How you doing?
Honestly, I want to kind of take a step back and maybe we should rethink the best time zone thing after watching the Pac-12 just do what they've done. Jeez. Back to me. Everything's been good, man. I can't complain, man. Like I said, I've been watching some interesting basketball this past weekend and today, and I've enjoyed a lot of it. I've been heartbroken at the same time. I've been in awe. It's just everything that you would expect from the field, man. This is what
everything you expect from the first weekend of the tournament. All right, so Sunday. I keep saying it's Sunday, and it's actually Monday. It's very weird having the tournament games like on the wrong day. It's been throwing me off all week. But I think the biggest takeaway that I had from today's games was that like the Pac-12 I think that they're actually like legit. Like what first of all, what were we missing before that we didn't see with them? And two, like we have four Pac-12 teams down in the Sweet 16. One of them was a 6 seed in USC. One of them was a 7 seed in Oregon. One of them was an 11 seed that played in the playing game in UCLA. And one of them was a 12 seed in Oregon State. Like what were we missing there?
I feel like this is going to be a cop-out answer, but I feel like we all, not just me, but I feel like a lot of people that are involved in college basketball kind of get so preoccupied with the steel sharpens steel mindset, thinking, you know, if you play the better teams consistently during the year, if you play against this team and that team or in this conference or that conference consistently during the year, it will prepare you for the tournament, which it does in a sense. I mean, who would think that playing against competition would be bad for you? But I kind of feel like with the Pac-12 teams, a ton of them have played against some decent competition early on and it didn't work out. And just like other conferences, you know, you get written off like, all right, well, they're not as good this year because they didn't do well against this conference who we assume is going to be stacked or they have the better players or the better team or good coaching. And we kind of write them off. Not to mention the way the time zones work, we don't catch a lot of their games as consistently. So we don't see their growth like we see, you know, a UConn's growth or we see a Maryland's growth throughout the year. So they can kind of get overlooked. And then when the tournament time comes, I mean, these guys have been putting in work, obviously, and when it's time to play, they shine. I have nothing but I had to tip my hat off to them, but I'm not taking this hat off, but I tip my hat off to them.
Yeah, I think we all kind of saw Oregon coming, right? Like, I don't know if we necessarily run Iowa off the floor the way that they ran Iowa off the floor, but I think we all saw Oregon coming. Like, it was pretty obvious in the moment that was a team that was much better than what their record was going to be because, you know, they had a couple of losses during conference play when they were coming out of their pauses, and they never really had a chance to get a good one. So we saw Oregon coming. Mm-hmm. The USC thing is, to me, that one's pretty obvious, right? Evan Mobley and Isaiah Mobley, when they played the way that they did tonight against Kansas, oh, dude, I don't know if like they could take down Gonzaga. Like I don't even think that that's an exaggeration. Look, there were three plays that stood out to me more than anything else today. Like we know what kind of impact Evan Mobley has defensively because of his ability to just completely take away anything within 12 feet of the basket and completely eliminate ball screens. But there were three plays. One of them was Isaiah Mobley. I think it was the fourth three that he hit in the first half was a step back three. It was a 6'11" power forward that's known as kind of like a lob target a little bit, right? So he hits a step back three. In the second half, I think it was the third possession of the half, Evan Mobley grabs a defensive rebound. Brings it all the way down the court, dribbles into the paint, turns around, dribbles into a post-up, has David McCormick on his back, waits until the help comes to him, and then just kicks it out to a wide-open three-point shooter for USC. Bang. Drills the three. Three possessions later, literally as I'm finishing the tweet, to say, like, holy shit, Evan Mobley just did this. Isaiah Mobley catches the ball on the wing, pump fakes, two dribbles into the paint around David McCormick, draws a help defender, kicks it out to the corner, boom, wide open three. And if those two are going to be able to do that with the shooters that USC has around them, that is a scary good team.
No, it was definitely. I kind of felt like the Pac-12, as far as the tournament, I kind of thought they had a pretty, like, I don't want to say welcoming mat, like, or just, but I mean, if I look at their first game, like Oregon had VCU, which I knew Oregon would win that game. I just thought that was going to be the case. USC, who's a good team with a really good player, has Drake, who's a good team, but I don't think Drake has anybody. I didn't think Drake had anybody that would match up with Mobley, period. And their games, like their games that this today, I mean, this the next round were the important ones, you know, Iowa and Kansas, excuse me. Those are the proven games. I'm still looking more or less to see what UCLA does the next round. But I mean, I kind of feel like they got an emotional roller coaster from ACU, and they beat them. They were better than them. And not to mention, I mean, BYU is good, but I still thought UCLA was a better team. But like, it's not impossible to think that if USC plays this well, that they can possibly beat a Gonzaga. I mean, do I think it's going to be the case? Nah, but it's very possible, especially if Moby's playing well, and especially when, in my opinion, Gonzaga's kryptonite would be the inside pressure they'd have to place on Drew Timmy. I mean, do I think those guards can keep up with Gonzaga's guards? Nah, no chance. But if Evan Mobley demands that much attention because he and his brother are out there putting work in the paint, then those guards can probably do a little more damage than Gonzaga would expect them to.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing would be that you still have to get past Oregon, who has been awesome, right?
I mean, geez.
the reason why that matchup, like the reason why they can give Gonzaga a lot of trouble is that, like, Gonzaga runs a continuity ball screen, which basically means all they want to do offensively is get their guards coming downhill off of ball screens, get Timmy rolling to the basket and trying to find him on post seals. And what Evan Mobley can do is, one, take away Drew Timmy's post seals because he's so long. And two, you can't – like, it's very, very difficult to run ball screens against USC because Evan Mobley is so good at playing drop coverage. And that could be a very, very problematic matchup for Gonzaga. I still think that they would win.
Definitely.
But then at the other end of the floor, if Isaiah Mobley is able to at least play a little bit on the perimeter, then like they can just take such advantage of the fact that they have so much size. Now, that's still a pretty big if. And again, we're also talking about the fact that like this was like probably the best game we're ever going to see USC play. So we got to also keep that in context. But then like UCLA, that was incredible too. But you know, I think part of this run that UCLA is on is, one, they beat a Michigan State team that like is apparently not very good. They beat BYU, who is coming from a league where, I mean, look, everyone from like the Mountain West and the WCC, I think we can kind of say was maybe a little bit overinflated. You know,
I thought they overachieved this year personally.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a good team, though. I like their team.
They were good, but they probably weren't.
They weren't. Yeah.
And then UCLA beat Abilene Christian. So like they're one of those teams that got a little bit of a benefit of the draw. That's not to take, like, I'm not trying to take away from what they did, because I mean, Johnny Juzang was awesome. Jaime Jacquez was awesome. The dunk that he had against BYU at the end. Did you see that
one? That was big. Yeah. You're talking about the in OT?
The one, or I can't remember.
He had a good overtime. He had a good overtime. No, it was
Michigan State. Yeah, yeah.
Michigan State.
They were pressing him on the perimeter, and he drives left around the dude and takes off and dunks it two hands in traffic. Just, that was
awesome. I like him, though. I like him. He's tough.
He can play, man. He can play. Yeah. So I mean, that was they looked really good, and then Oregon State to me is just that's just kind of like your plucky underdog story, like that.
Yeah,
those things happen. They matched up well with a bad Tennessee team. They played really confident against an Oklahoma State team that just was atrocious. Oklahoma State made so many bad decisions. We'll get into that. All right. So what happened with the Big Ten? I have a theory. Can I bounce this theory off you?
Before you bounce the theory off of it, like, what is the name of this podcast? What is the name of the show?
The Doster and Deshaun podcast. Why?
I thought it was Beers and Ball.
The Beers and Ball. Oh yeah, it's the Beers and Ball live stream. How could we
like start the show?
I've been drinking my beer.
That's not how we do things here, Rob. We usually talk about what we're drinking.
Look, you know what? I apologize. You're right.
You should apologize to these people.
You must have something good over there.
I really don't. I'm here with the Hefeweizen, the Vine Steppen. This is a nice little German masterpiece here. So shout out to the people over there in the Bavarian region.
What brewery is it?
Dude, I couldn't tell you.
it's like a legit German beer. German beer from Germany. Okay.
Yes.
I got a nice little Kane Brewing Company IPA going there. Tall boy. It's only a single IPA. It's not a dip or a tipa today. So
it's not a competition. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's not a competition. It's a little bit light. But I was in the mood for something. You know, it was nice out here today. It was 60 degrees out. So I needed something kind of like a little bit lighter in my life. You know, like it was one of those days where you just kind of, you know, I didn't want to, as much as I love sitting inside all day and watching basketball, like I kind of just wanted to like sit outside and drink and get the barbecue going and smoke some meat and you know how it is. Anyway. Yeah. All right. So
you got these people riled up in the comments, by the way.
Well, for what did I do?
Oh, they're talking, they're on your neck about Michigan, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I mean, I did think against Michigan. And I said they were, I don't know if I said they were the third or fourth best team in the Big Ten. That seems something that's like, maybe I said that in the preseason. Anyway,
let's get it.
Anyway, so about the Big Ten, here's my theory on what's going on with them and why Michigan is still around. So the big thing about that conference is like everybody, they play like a very throwback brand of basketball, right? Like everybody in the league has one of these big physical centers that can't really guard out on the perimeter. And what have we said all season long about Kofi Coburn? Illinois gets in trouble when they face teams that can run him, put him into ball screens and make him have to make a decision out on the perimeter. And that's precisely what Loyola did. They were able to get him, put Cameron Krutwig into, it was like DHOs and dribble handoffs, off of like multiple screens, and be able to create a kind of action that forced Kofi to have to be the guy that was kind of guarding somebody that they didn't send him any help. And he couldn't do it. Like that's how they were able to just slice Illinois' defense apart doing that. And when you combine that with the fact that Loyola is very, very, very good defensively, that's problematic long term. You look at teams like Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin is always going to have two bigs out there. So when you have to go up against a team like Baylor that spaces the floor, but it's going to pressure the hell out of your guards and is going to take away opportunities for you to be able to get entry passes into the post to take advantage of your size, you know, that becomes a problem. Same thing with Purdue. They're kind of built around the post. So while all of these teams are good in their own right, they kind of get built up a little bit playing the style of basketball against teams that all play that same style. And when you get outside of the conference and you start facing some of these teams that are able to space the floor and that are able to play a little bit more modern and that are able to get shooters out on the perimeter and pull bigs away from the basket, that's the kind of thing where you run into trouble, and that's why you see them end up losing games. So the reason why I think Michigan is still here is I do believe that they probably have the closest thing to a modern NBA roster because they can still put out, you know, even with without Isaiah Livers there, they can still put like Franz kind of playing that 3-4 role and Shondi playing that 2-3 role. And ideally you have Livers out there because he's kind of that perfect four man. It allows them to kind of negate some of those mismatches. But that's my take on the Big Ten, is they play a style that's very, very difficult to play in the modern game.
I just feel like a lot of the coaches didn't make proper adjustments during these games. Like when you have that kind of size mismatch, to me with basketball, regardless of like what's going on and whether like at the moment right now we're playing more four out and one in or even five out, I mean, basketball is basketball. And sometimes some matchups do go against what you can do. But at the same time, if your coaches can make the proper adjustments, you can still have those advantages like they have in size. And I don't feel like many of the coaches made many adjustments. And most of the time, these, like you just brought up, a lot of these guys, these bigs, were out there guarding, you know, bigs that can pass like Krutwig or systems that literally had these bigs on the perimeter a little bit. I feel with these teams, adjustments were everything, and I feel like Michigan made the right adjustments and they played a great, like great basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't get too hung up on that stuff.
Can we just give a quick shout out to Brandon Johns? Played 27 minutes. He was really, really good. And when they made their run in the second half, he was the guy that stepped up and was put on an island against Javonte Smart and kept him in front. And then was put on an island against Cam Thomas and kept him in front. And like those guys got to the paint, but they didn't finish at the rim. He made like three or four really big plays like that during the stretch where Michigan turned like a 5-point deficit and pushed it out to a 10-point lead. And if he can do that and have that kind of an impact, then it kind of negates. Well, it doesn't negate. It doesn't take away because he's not the shooter that Isaiah Livers is.
Yeah, sure. I was about to say he's not.
But that's very, very big for Michigan moving forward. And it kind of gives them a little bit of a window to get Isaiah Livers back,
I think. At least in the defensive end, especially. Like it gives them another person that can guard.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Finish your point on Michigan.
No, but it's just more or less these guys just taking advantage of these opportunities. When you have teams that are smaller, that'll have smaller fours or play undersized, and they're going to speed you up, it's important that you actually slow down when you get on offense and use the mismatches that you possibly can get, depending on who you have. Because sometimes if you just got two bigs out there and one of them can't finish, then you're at a disadvantage. But a lot of these Big Ten teams do have solid four men and five men that can score the ball in the paint. Yep. So it would be beneficial for them to next time, I would say, not all, because all of them aren't there anymore. But next time, take advantage of those size matchups and take advantage of their strength. I mean, I kind of feel like they went away with their strength trying to keep up with these teams as opposed to like exploiting their advantages.
Yep, it's hard. It's hard to do. So there's one Big Ten team left in the tournament, and that is Michigan. And I think for my money, they probably have the most interesting matchup in the Sweet 16, but I'm just going to roll through the matchups real quick. We have in the West region, we have Gonzaga facing off with Creighton, and we have USC facing off with Oregon. Both of those are going to be really good games. I'm excited about them. In the South, we have Baylor and Villanova. That should be really good. And we have Arkansas against Oral Roberts, which is the one matchup where I'm like, yeah, I think that one might end up being a blowout. And we can get to that if we want to. In the Midwest, we have Loyola taking on Oregon State, which is kind of like whatever. And then we have Syracuse taking on Houston. And honestly, like I think we're going to see the orange in the Elite Eight. Like Jim Boeheim, it all opened up for a man. He might be able to get to a Final Four again. God bless Jim Boeheim. And then in the East, we have the best matchup of the Sweet 16. For my money, is Michigan, Florida State. And on the other side of that bracket, we have UCLA and Alabama. So that we got some good matchups, man. It worked out pretty well. We got some really interesting matchups. It wasn't ideal. We didn't get Cade in Illinois, and we didn't get Luka Garza and Evan Mobley, but it ended up being pretty good. It worked out pretty well. We have a couple Cinderellas. We have that one. What the fuck is going on? Matchup. I'm feeling pretty good about the Sweet 16. How do you feel about it?
I love it personally. I really cannot wait to watch Gonzaga and Creighton. I hope it's going to be a good game. Here's the beauty of Creighton's scenario to me. Obviously, they had their stuff going on until the end of the season, but I like to like back up even further. Marcus Zagorowski was not playing well early in the season. I would even say toward the end of the season, he was not playing well. And like I was worried. I was just sitting there thinking like, oh my goodness, these guys aren't going to pick it up. And I think once they got to around the Villanova game where they like beat Villanova pretty good at home, they like picked it up and changed gears. And you have your stuff going on with them, but I feel like they will be a team that can give certain teams a blueprint of possibly beating Gonzaga. Like I feel like they play at a fast pace. They play great on the perimeter. They have four or five guys that can put up 15 plus in a game. I think Denzel Mahoney is like an amazing basketball player. I'm like a really big fan of his. And just I expect that to be a good game, and I expect Leonard Hamilton versus Juwan Howard to be an amazing game too. I'm excited to watch that game.
So on Creighton, Gonzaga, like I do actually think that Creighton is built to give Gonzaga some problems, because when they can go to their four-guard matchup or four-guard lineup, like Mahoney can chase around Corey Kispert and can probably body Kispert at the other end of the floor. You got Damian Jefferson, you have Mitch Ballack, and you have Marcus Zagorowski, and those guys can match up with Creighton's four guards. They're not going to stop them, yeah, but they'll be able to put up points at the other end too. The one place Bishop. That I think there's two things, two reasons I have a concern. I think that you really need Christian Bishop on the floor because of what he brings, but I just don't see him being able to stop Drew Timmy in the post. Like, I think Timmy will get whatever he wants against Christian Bishop. And it's also just kind of feels like Gonzaga Creighton is Gonzaga light. Does that make sense? Like, it's just they want to do the same things. They kind of play the same way. They kind of have stars at the same positions, but you just take every player on Gonzaga at the same position over the same player on Creighton. And at that point, it's just kind of like, well, who are you going to take? You're going to take the team that has all the better play. Like, who would you take, Jalen Suggs or Marcus Zagorowski?
You're probably going to hate me. I like Zagorowski right now for what he does for his team. You know, and what Suggs does for his team is important, but you also have to know that that team is running through Kispert and is running through Timmy. Even though Suggs is the point guard, that team runs through Kispert and it runs through Timmy.
Well, you just obliterated my point, but
I'm just saying, it's just like, I love Suggs. I think Suggs is going to be like a top 10 pick. That's just what it is. But for what, as far as that matchup does, like, I feel like the onus is going to have to be on Suggs to guard Zagorowski. Like, he's going to have to guard him. It's not going to be the team doesn't, when I look at Gonzaga, they're not going to just let Suggs do whatever he wants for that game. I feel like Kispert's is going to have a little bit more leash. I feel like, obviously, Timmy's going to have a leash. Of course, Suggs is going to go out there and play, but it's not going to be able to take advantage of I don't think he's going to be able to take advantage of Zagorowski like that. Right, I feel like Zagorowski is going to have the ball to do what he wants to do. He's the leader. Scorer for their team.
I love Zagorowski. I'm not laughing because, like, I don't love Marcus Zagorowski. I had him as a second team All-American last season.
No, Shawn Michael is murdering me in here. He's like, what? Yo,
the comments. They're so funny, and they're like,
I love Sean. Sean's keeping it a buck with me. He's like, no, I don't agree with you, bro.
Yeah, and like, we had some real, like, Big Ten battles and Big Ten rivalries going on in the like, I can't even keep up with them, man. Like, shout out to everybody in the comments right now. You guys are killing me. We're trying to do a show here.
I love it.
So, like, look, okay. Most, like, can you concede that most people would probably take Jalen Suggs over Marcus Zagorowski?
Of course, you
can concede that one.
I like Zagorowski.
So, who'd you take, Corey Kispert or Mitch Ballack?
Come on, it's Corey Kispert. It's not even close.
So who are you taking? Are you taking Andrew Nembhard or are you taking Damian Jefferson?
Isn't Jefferson more of the four? Well, they four out. It doesn't really matter. I'll probably take Nembhard.
Yeah, that one's
that one. I was thinking more Denzel Mahoney.
Well, it's Denzel or Joel Ayayi. And I know you're probably going to take Denzel, and I think I might take Denzel there too. But, like, Joel has been – he does all the little things for Gonzaga. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of stuff that he does that doesn't pop in a box score. And, I mean, like, that one's a close one. But I'll give you this. Four out of the five positions that we went through, most people would probably take a Gonzaga player over a Creighton player, and that's why the matchup ends up being problematic. So the other matchup that's really, really exciting is Michigan Florida State. I cannot wait for that. I think it's going to be a rough matchup for Mike Smith, and that's the concern that I have here, is that when we see – so the comparison that I'll give is Virginia when Kihei Clark plays, because he's really the only other small league guard that I can think of off the top of my head. And Kihei was really effective this year when he was able to kind of make a play, get into the paint, and find somebody and create.
Yeah,
and he couldn't function against the length and athleticism that Florida State has. And I'll be very curious to see how Mike Smith does against that. The other issue is that, I mean, we've talked about this on the stream before. What Florida State does is they literally switch every single exchange. Yeah. I honestly, and Dave, tell me if you agree with this. I honestly feel like they don't play as much man as they're playing like a matchup zone.
Yeah, they match up they match up very well.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a combination of both. And I feel like a lot of what Michigan does offensively and a lot of where their points come from in the half court is from set plays and from running their stuff and getting shots out of the stuff that they run, as opposed to like the thing about LSU, the diametrically opposed there is that LSU just does everything one-on-one. Like they literally run, they don't run a fucking thing. They just go out there and they're like, okay, it's Jamonte Smart's turn. Okay, it's Trendon Wofford's turn. Okay, Cam Thomas, you go in the mid post and shoot over whatever little guard is guarding against you. He's a bucket, by the way. I love that guy. So that switching defense that Florida State can play is the kind of thing that can take you out of the stuff that you run. So I will be very, very interested to see what kind of tweaks. Look, you give Juwan Howard 4 days to come up with something, he's going to come up with something good. So I'm really looking forward to see like what he comes up with and how he deals with that, because it's similar to like, I mean, Maryland kind of runs the same stuff. Like there's a lot of teams that do it. No one does it better than Leonard Hamilton of Florida State.
Yeah, I wonder how Juwan will approach this, like more or less. At the end of the day, like Michigan runs their offensive sets. Yeah, they run a bunch of sets, and it's a team. They run a lot of team offense, no one-on-one stuff. But more or less, it's to get the ball to a certain spot, whether it be Dickinson or whoever the play is designed to get to. But because Florida State, so I feel like it won't really matter. I mean, they have length everywhere. As long as they get – I kind of feel like they take advantage of Florida State not being extremely like big, as I feel Michigan will be with Hunter Dickinson. I don't really think it'll be that big a deal. I think Michigan will win.
So, want to hear a crazy stat that Steve Berkowitz from from USA Today just tweeted out?
Talk to me.
The top 14 highest paid coaches in college basketball are all out of the NCAA tournament right now. They've all been knocked out. Only two of the top 20 highest paid coaches are still in the NCAA tournament. Can you guess who they are?
Scott Drew.
Nope. Scott Drew is not one of the top 20 highest paid coaches in college basketball.
The hell is he doing?
I also think the data that he's using is public school data, and I don't know if Baylor or Villanova or Gonzaga are going to be listed there. But no, he is not one of the top 20 highest paid coaches, according to Steve Berkowitz. Neither is Jim Boeheim. Neither is Mark Few. Neither is Jay Wright, which is just crazy to think about. The two highest paid coaches that are left in the tournament right now are Mick Cronin and Dana Altman.
Mick Cronin just got that job too. So yeah, he would be one of the highest paid.
Yep. All right, so let's get into our first weekend superlatives. I think this will be fun. I'm really excited about doing this. All right, so let's start with who was your MVP of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament?
This was tough.
I had a hard time making this pick.
Yeah, I had a tough time. I mean, I was trying to pick between. I mean, Ishmael and O'Banner were amazing.
Hold on. I know it's easy. I like Shawn Michael here.
I love him. I love him. I said that earlier. I started laughing when I saw it. I was like, that's hilarious. It was tough.
Right. MVP, I'm sorry I cut you off.
It was tough. It was obviously numerous games. Asmus was great. O'Banner was great. But I had to go with Buddy Boeheim, mainly because Buddy Boeheim beat San Diego State, who's ranked in the top 15. They beat West Virginia, who's ranked in the top 13. And if I look at everyone else's route, not counting Oral Roberts, they beat Ohio State, who's ranked 2, and then Florida, who's like in probably like in the top 35 or something like that. If I look at Buddy Boeheim and him putting up 30 both games, I'd probably have to go with him. He was entertaining to watch.
Man, he was good.
Yeah,
he did not miss. He literally did not miss,
and he talked shit the entire time too. It hurt.
I said this to Goodman the other day. To me, it's so funny when Buddy Boeheim talks shit because he looks like he's 11 years old. He only gets the beard patches right here because you can kind of see the 5 o'clock shadow coming in. And like he's got like the little kid haircut still, like the young kid haircut that looks like he just had his parents shave up on the sides. And he comes out there and he just hits daggers and he's snarling at you and he's staring
talking down shit under his breath.
And his name is Buddy.
Oh, and I'm a bucket. Jerry McNamara is on the sideline just talking shit. It's like a whole ordeal over there. I was sitting, as soon as I saw, I forgot Jerry McNamara. I was sitting as soon as he made that, I forgot who made the three in the corner. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, damn, this is a hell of a day.
So, like, by principle, I hate Syracuse, but like, it's so hard to hate the Syracuse team because these dudes are just so cocky. I love it so much.
I love it. It was awesome. It was an awesome game. I enjoyed that game.
So I had four names written down. Well, actually five names. But I didn't want to go with one of the guys from Oral Roberts because I feel like if I went with Max Asmus or Kevin O'Banner, I would be doing one of the others a disservice because I think that why they are so good is because of how good each of those two guys are in their role and the scheme that Paul Mills puts them in. So I didn't want, like, that's kind of why I leaned. Does that make sense? That's kind of why.
Definitely. Because I couldn't really pick because I'm like, all right, well, we know how much attention Asmus is getting and we see how well O'Banner is playing. It's just like they're very, very much complimenting one another and they're doing a great job doing so.
So I came down to four other guys. One of them was Buddy Boeheim. So I'm going to just cross him off because you already went with him.
Thank you.
One of them was Justin Smith at Arkansas.
Okay. Shout out to Arkansas.
Like, I just thought like he was so good playing the small ball five role and the way and how good he was in that position is one, the reason why they all of a sudden blew Colgate off the floor. And two, the biggest reason why they were able to take down Texas Tech in the second round. The third guy I had written down was Johnny Juzang. Like he was so good, dude. The first half against BYU, like there was a 4-minute stretch where I swear to God he hit 17 threes, and I don't know how many he actually made. And I think he finished with 27 for the game. But watching that, I was like, it felt like he hit 17 straight threes. he came up really big. But the guy I ended up going with is Jeremiah Robinson Earl.
And go ahead. I was gonna say I'll talk to you afterwards.
Just the biggest reason why is because they kind of turned him into the creative outlet of their offense, right? Like we were all worried about what they're gonna do for point guard play, and they kind of made Jeremiah Robinson Earl that guy. Like they get him the ball at the high post or at the mid post. Their favorite place to get him the rock is like that half circle between the foul line and the 3-point line at the top of the key. I don't know what you call that, but it's like 17 feet away. And just square somebody up, get them the ball, have them reverse pivot, square up a five, put four shooters around them, and let them go. And he finished, he averaged 20 points, 8.5 boards, and 6 assists in the two games this weekend. I know it was North Texas, and I know it was
exactly. That's the only reason I didn't put him up there because I'm not gonna lie, even though they're without Colin Gillespie, I still thought that if this was a regular season and they didn't have Colin Gillespie for whatever reason, I still think Villanova beats Winthrop, and I still think Villanova beats North Texas.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't even look past it.
Yep. The other guys that I did have on my list were the Mobleys. But again, like I was making this as the game was playing. So it was kind of like we had to prepare for this before that game started. So the Mobleys are absolutely on that list, and I will definitely be talking about them later on.
Right. You see the comments here. So I gotta say this, love you guys, but whatever Rob tweets, you can tell which team he bet on.
it's true.
Shout out to Ash. Talking cash right
it's
here.
So hard, man, because I get so
you love this game, man. You get it emotionally wrapped into it, just like
too much. All right, so next up we have what was the biggest surprise for you in the first round of the tournament?
There were so many. But I had to pick Illinois losing to Loyola University in Chicago just off of the fact that we expected Illinois to do so much more in the tournament. And Loyola they scouted them and they picked them apart from the beginning of the game to the end. Like it was like the biggest shock to me. I had nothing to say. Kind of like when Oral Roberts beat Ohio State and they were like, you know what, 13 million out of 14 million brackets are busted. Perfect brackets are busted. I was just like, wow, that's crazy. But I wasn't worried too much about Oral Roberts. I'm like, oh, maybe they'll lose the next round. Granted, they didn't. But when Illinois lost, like I almost felt like my heart was broken. I was like, forget my bracket. I was like expecting these guys to do like to be there in the Final Four or at least the Elite Eight. Yeah. And for Kofi and Io not to be there, I tip my hat off to to Loyola. They did a great job. So that was probably the biggest surprise that I had.
So the biggest surprise for me, I kind of looked at this like the bit that we have a biggest disappointment one next. So what surprised you the most in a bad way, and what surprised you the most in a good way, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
It was the Pac-12. It was everything about the Pac-12. They didn't just come out here. Like, here's the thing. It'd be one thing if they kind of like luck boxed their way into having four teams in the Sweet 16, into having a quarter of the Sweet 16, but they didn't. This is not a fluke. USC kicked the shit out of Kansas. Oregon beat the hell out of Iowa, right?
Yeah, they did.
Like Oregon State, those were comprehensive wins over Texas or over Tennessee and over Oklahoma State. Like that wasn't some, someone got in foul trouble, some other dude hit seven threes that was unexpected, and they hit a beater that bounced off the front of the rim and hit the top of the backboard and win it. Like, no. They beat them by double digits. Like, neither of those games are really all that close.
Yeah, they weren't close.
It was exciting down the stretch is because Oklahoma State started forcing some turnovers and actually gave Cade Cunningham the ball. That's the only reason why. And then UCLA's is a little bit different, like, because of the reasons I mentioned. But, like, still, they looked really, really, really good. So, yeah, for me, the Pac-12 was the biggest surprise. All right, what was the biggest disappointment?
You already know. I had Texas going to like the second day. Like, geez, we're like, at the end of the day, like where Texas was in the bracket, I personally thought that they would give Alabama a struggle. Like, I'm over here like looking past you. I'm looking past all these teams, and I'm like, oh, they'll give Alabama a struggle with their length and this. And these guys go and they have a nail biter with Abilene Christian, and then they end up losing. And I was just like, yeah, it's like that was the cherry on top for what I expected, like what I thought the tournament was going to be and what it has been. Like it was great. Like, think about this: like they fouled. Granted, it was a stupid foul. Coleman fouls a 50% free throw shooter who knocks both of them in at the very end of the game in the NCAA tournament. It's just like, geez, man. I expected Texas to make the next game at least. So yeah. I was kind of disappointed in how they played. I was disappointed in, like, just everything about the game. I thought Shaka Smart could have did a little bit better with
I do not understand why he did not start pushing the tempo.
We
can't function against their half-court defense because our guards cannot handle this kind of ball pressure. So what are we going to do? We're going to walk it up and play even slower and give
slower.
Them even more time to find a way to make
Shaka. Like, all season, Courtney Ramey and Coleman have been pushing the ball in transition, and they've been finding guys to shoot, and they've been – and then obviously Jericho Sims and these guys that run the floor, rebound, and they do what they do. And they did none of that. Like, it was some of the worst basketball I've seen Texas play all season, and surprise, they lost. So
yeah, it was really bad. For me, the biggest disappointment overall was just the Big Ten.
Yeah.
As a whole, like, I really thought that this was going to be like a breakout week for a guy like a Jaden Ivey or someone like the Trevion Williams. I really thought that Illinois was going to come in here and just blow everybody's doors off. I really wanted to see Luka Garza make a run. Like, I think that's the thing that sucks the most about this is, like, we're never going to see Io play again in college. Like, we're never going to see Luka Garza play again in college. It feels like we kind of got cheated out of seeing those guys play in the biggest moments because they got knocked out early in the tournament. So
cheated themselves. That's tough.
Yeah. For me, that's less of a disappointment of like, oh, I'm so disappointed in you, and more like, oh man, it fucking sucks that we're not going to see those teams get a
chance. Yeah, that's more or less than
so, it was for me too. All right, what was the best game that you saw this weekend?
I honestly couldn't tell you the best game. One of my favorite games was Rutgers versus Houston. I enjoyed Rutgers and Houston's game. I didn't get the scoring. Scoring productivity I thought I would get out of Ron Harper Jr. But the game was really good, and it was awesome to see. I mean, it wasn't awesome, but it was weird. It was like I was happy to see Giroux get out there. Like, he subbed into the game and limped them to a victory. basically. Granted, he wasn't like, you know, the guy that was putting up numbers and everything like that, but he, his production and he helped them get to a victory. It was fun to watch that game. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
I'm loving the.
Oh, bro, I'm telling you, I'm living in these captions.
The comments are great right now.
Poor Illinois. I know. I love it. I love it.
Shawn Michaels, hold nothing back.
No, we need that. We need to bring Shawn Michaels back here every time. Like, he's awesome. I think we're ramping him up, though. He's going to start getting crazy. I guarantee it.
He's about to get lit. He might be having a beers and ball live stream with us.
Exactly. Himself. His own beers and ball live stream.
All right. So I thought that the best game, I'm going to talk about that next. So I'm not going to waste it on this, but I thought that the most intense game, the one that I was most like riveted on, was Texas and Abilene Christian. Like, that was the most, I had nothing on that game. I didn't bet on that game. I had Texas in the Final Four, but like, fuck my bracket. It's already destroyed. Like, it doesn't matter. Right. And so I literally had nothing, like no investment whatsoever. Like, I like Shaka. He's great. I like Joe Golden too. Like, he's great. So there's no emotional investment for me in that game. And I was riveted, dude. Like, it was one of those things where I was like biting my nails. I'm like leaning forward in my chair. And I was like, oh, and you're like, you know how when games get really intense, like you can feel it beating in your heart. Like, you can just feel the tightness in your chest. It was like that. And I had nothing on the game. It was so intense. And it felt like every possession and every bucket mattered so much. And I think to me, that right there is the beauty of the NCAA tournament, because that basketball was god awful. The team that won shot 29% from the
floor. Yeah.
Made three threes, right?
Yeah.
29% from the floor and made three threes and forced 23 turnovers. Like, it was horrible. It was horrid. Their last four field goals were like runners that were just like, oh, I'm going to throw this up. That would bank in. It was horrible basketball, and nice. I could not take my eyes off of it. I was so locked in and so stressed out. And yeah, so for me, that was the – I don't know if I would call it the best game, but that was what I was just kind of like, okay, yeah, March is fucking here, bro. All right. What was the most memorable moment for you?
Memorable moment? I mean, Oral Roberts just ruining everyone's bracket. I mean, they just – like the first day, I'll remember, like, I sat there and was like, you know what? Ohio State is going to be just fine in this tournament. I can see them getting to a Sweet 16 or Elite Eight. And just because, you know, EJ Liddell is a really good player, bam, smacks me right in my damn mouth first game. Oh, man.
I'm going to no comment that one. All right. So
I wish Jeff was here.
Yeah. So for me, the most memorable moment was it's weird. Like, the thing that will stick to me about it was the Oral Roberts and Ohio State game, for sure. But the thing that will stick with me the most was Dwayne Washington down the stretch. He shot them out of that game, man. And,
yeah, we talked about that all season, though, bro. Like,
yeah, like he's the reason why they almost beat Illinois in the Big Ten title game, and he's the reason why they could not get a good possession down the stretch against Oral Roberts in the first round of the tournament. And it was just the image of him after missing that shot, that like he had a wide open look from the top. Like, you can literally not ask for a better look to tie the game when you're down by three than what Dwayne Washington took at the end of the game. And like, he bricked it pretty bad. Like, it wasn't really all that close. Like, when you're missing off to the right like that, you know, you did not, like, you didn't get a good shot off. You didn't get a good release. He wasn't shooting that confidently. So the image that I'll always remember is like those ones more than anything else, especially in that moment. So I felt so bad for him, man. Like, look, I don't know if I've told the story before, but when I was a junior in high school, there's a team in Connecticut called Hill House High, which is like, that's the juggernaut. Like, that's the best basketball program in Connecticut, especially in Southern Connecticut. They got D1 dudes every year. They got players going to like the A10, like some high major leagues every once in a while. And when I was there, they had a kid named Robert McIver. Everyone called him Fluff. He started at Providence and he transferred to Houston, and he ended up averaging like 25 a game as a senior at Houston. Just a stud, like absolute bucket. And when we played at their place, they beat us on a buzzer beater, right? And then they came back and they played at our place. And, like, I mean, look, this was the best that we had played all season long. I think the score was 75-74. They were up. There was, like, 6 seconds left. And some dude on my team drove and kicked it out to me, and I got a wide open look from three. And, like, I let that thing go, and I start backing up because I thought it was good. Like, it felt – you know when you shoot it and it feels good? Like,
yeah,
I was doing like a backwards thing with my hand up, and, like, the shit hit the back of the rim and then hit the front of the rim and then popped up in the air and fell out. And I was like, you got to be fucking – how did that not go in? And I still think – like, that was a meaningless high school game 20 years ago. And I still think about that, like, every once in a while.
I hate to say it happened to such a good guy.
Missed like the same shot on national television to lose as a 2 seed to a 15 seed. Like, that one's going to stick with him for a long, long time. And so that's when I was just kind of like, man, seeing that look on his face, I knew that one hurt. So,
yeah, not to mention the stuff after the games. Yeah, Justin just brought that up, Justin Hanley. Like with EJ, and these guys are probably getting death threats and stuff like that. I tweeted, I was just like, that's ridiculous, bro.
Yeah, I'm like, whatever. Fans are going to do that. And my guess is those weren't actually – that those probably weren't Ohio State fans. My guess is those were idiots that bent on Ohio State and lost or had Ohio State in their bracket and lost. Like that.
No bet on kids, man.
No actual fan of a team would send something like that to a player. Like, if you're an actual fan of a team, like, you would be heartbroken for the players because you're not the only way you could be a fan of a team is if you have some kind of emotional investment in that team and in those players. And if, like, you actually have an emotional investment in those players, you're not going to sit here and just, like, cuss them out and threaten to kill them because of a loss. Yeah. That was definitely
a loss
on the game or something.
It is.
All right. So, next up, we have I Wish You Were Still Here award goes to.
For me, it's not anyone in the tournament. I see all my Michigan guys in here chirping about Michigan. I wish Isaiah Livers was here because they got past Texas Southern and they got past LSU, and they're getting ready to play a really good FSU team who has a lot of guys around the same size and this is a switching team, and they're going to need all the guns they can have. And I hope. I don't know too much about Isaiah Livers' injury, but I know they were talking about maybe this or maybe that. I don't know, but I hope that Isaiah Livers could come back, because if he does, that puts Michigan at full strength and gives them an opportunity to even go even further in the tournament. And I kind of feel like if there's two teams left in the country that haven't played Gonzaga that could beat them, Michigan and Baylor are those teams. So in this tournament, I don't really see – like, I hope Creighton can put up a good fight, but I don't think Creighton – like, even then, like, it's still Gonzaga. And I feel like Michigan at full strength or Baylor at full strength would be good. So I wish Isaiah Livers was here, because this would make it a full tournament. I mean, everyone else had their fair shot at it almost, in a sense.
Yeah. I would like to see Isaiah Livers back too. That would be very, very good.
Not gonna happen, apparently.
All the Michigan fans is here. If anyone has heard anything, let us know. But the intel that I've gotten has, like, it's all been very, very, very limited. Oh God.
Oh God. Yeah.
Here we go.
What's up, boys?
Oh man, you just missed one of the greatest comments about some clothing that you and Thad Motto were wearing a little bit ago. These guys are laying into you guys.
I look pretty disheveled. Yeah, I didn't listen. I learned I don't really give a shit what I'm wearing these days. It does not matter to me anymore.
I love it.
Goodman, while you're here, this is actually perfect timing, because I just want to let you know, for the month of March, if you buy anything from manscaped.com with the promo code FIELD, you will not only get a 20% off the purchase price and free shipping, but a portion of the proceeds will be donated to the Testicular Cancer Society. With the reemergence of March basketball, Manscaped wants to remind men to take care of your balls. Check yourself for the most common form of cancer in men ages 18 to 34, testicular cancer. And, like, on a serious note, this actually touched people in our business recently. Kyle Boone, who works for CBS Sports, was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And I mentioned this last week, but Kyle, we're pulling for you, buddy. You can beat this. So make sure you guys go and get yourself tested. Ladies, if you are listening to this, make sure the men in your life, get check their balls, take care of their balls, make sure they check everything. So the Manscaped We Save Balls initiative, the goal is to raise awareness for testicular cancer while also ensuring that you keep things clean and trim. So go to Manscaped, I'm having a hard time with this. Go to manscaped.com and buy the Lawnmower 3.0 or the Perfect Package 3.0, the crop mops, or whatever it is you need, and be sure to use the code FIELD, F-I-E-L-D, to get free shipping, 20% off, and send some money to the Testicular Cancer Society. Your balls, Jeffrey, as always, will thank you.
Does he always struggle like this?
Nah. I think you put a little bit more pressure, and not to mention these comments this evening have been insane. Yeah, so there's a lot of pressure.
And also, it's the beers and ball live stream.
That's what I say.
Doster Dough is my favorite.
Yep.
There you go.
All right, Jeff, we're doing superlatives for the rest of this stream. So you can jump in, but you're going to have to kind of do it on the fly. Day and I prepared for this. So we got a list. What we're on right now is the I Wish You Were Still Here award. So Day said Isaiah Livers. Mine is Cade Cunningham. What do you got?
Yeah, I would say Cade. Trying to think if there's anybody else that I would say I wish you were here. Maybe Io. I'll go Io. You know, I miss Io already. I think he handles himself with complete class after losing, you know, posting a video and thanking the Illinois fans. And, you know, listen, he wasn't supposed to be back this year. Like, I remember sitting with Brad Underwood in Colorado Springs a year and a half ago, before last season, and him saying, and I don't know if he'll ever admit this, but him saying, we are going to do something different. We're going to figure out who Iowa's agent is now, so he doesn't have to worry about this shit during the season, and his family doesn't have to worry. They already know who their agent's going to be, and he's going to be gone after this year. We know it. Now, he didn't. He didn't play well enough to leave, but I thought it was kind of interesting way to handle it, and I actually like it for kids in the future, because that's not something you want to worry about as a parent or a kid during the season. You want to be laser focused. So I thought it was interesting, and again, it didn't matter. But I was going to be gone a year ago, and now he is gone. I mean, listen, the crazy thing, Day, what do you, if you're drafting, and I know it's hard with this year's draft, but where are you taking Io in the draft? What range? What range do you think he goes in?
He should go in the teens.
You know, you'd be surprised. A lot of the NBA guys, you'd be surprised. A lot of them. Here's a big question they ask me: what does he do great?
And that's interesting. Like, I mean, watching these games, he's had so much trouble if he doesn't have the ball in his right hand, to the point where when he came back from injury, they had to start another point guard side by side with him. So it's, if he's not, you know, making people better in the half court, right, and jump shooting obviously is not as consistent. He's great in transition, which is his plus.
Totally.
But I mean, if I look at him, I don't see De'Aaron Fox great in transition.
Oh, hell.
Like, so, and that's what I'm saying. So it's just like, if he doesn't do anything absolutely so outstanding that I could kind of see where they come from in that sense. I mean, I think because of how, like, the actual draft and the guys that are there, he has a good chance of getting drafted still somewhat, like, in the teens. I would say, like, maybe even, like, 15 and back. But still, like, I still wonder what he does.
I think he goes in the 20s.
He's good enough.
I think you take him in the 20s. I think you, at least I would take the risk on the fact that his catch and shoot ability will be enough that he can play off the ball, because I think he has the size to play the two in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So if you can play him in like a Lonzo Ball-esque, Tyrese Halliburton-esque role where he's a secondary playmaker in an offense and put him alongside someone that is a really good playmaker, jeez, and just kind of say, okay, we're going to use you in secondary actions, we're going to use you as a floor spacer. We're going to use you to, if things get bogged down, I think that's when he becomes really effective. But to me, like, he's very much a role player at best. And the swing skill is going to be like, what is his catch and shoot ability? If he's a guy that can shoot 36% from three of catch and shoot jumpers, then all of a sudden he becomes a very interesting role player at the next level. If he's not, then I mean, that's a different conversation. But given his work ethic, he's the kind of guy that I would probably just want to bet on, like the human being. I would assume that makes sense. Yeah.
I'll be right back. I'm dressing down, guys.
I'm curious though, like, do you see him as a Halliburton type? I don't see that because I feel like Halliburton did a lot.
Yeah,
he did a lot.
look, Tyrese is a great.
I was a big fan of him. Yeah, I was about to say.
He is a great passer. And I think Io is good, not great as a passer. Tyrese is also a great shooter. I think Io is good, not great as a shooter. Yeah. I think Tyrese is one of the best team defenders that you're going to fight. Like, he's one of these dudes that's got like a 7-foot wingspan and is never in the wrong spot. Like, he always makes the right rotation. He always makes the right read. He's always in the right position to tag a roller or to be in help side or be in the charge. Like, all of that stuff. He's always in the right spot. And I don't think Io was any of those things. But also, I would have taken Tyrese Halliburton in the top six of last year's draft. We're taking Io in, like, 25th.
Yeah, you know, so it's a different player. Yeah, you're right.
All of that stuff is baked into the cost of what it would take to draft him. All right, Jeff, here's one for you. What player got themselves paid this weekend?
What player got himself paid this weekend?
Yeah. How about this? Dave, why don't you go first while Jeff thinks about it?
Yeah, you got to give me.
I picked Kevin O'Banner. Bro, like, ooh. you're playing on a team with the leading scorer in the country. He averages like 19 and like 8 or something like that. And obviously they're going to need his scoring. And what does he do? He comes out and gets freaking 30 and 11 and against Ohio State and then 28 and 11 against Florida. Like, if it may not be NBA, it can be anywhere. I mean, I feel like either way, he set himself up to get himself paid because he played against a top 10 team in the country and kicked their ass. So, like, he's got film. He's got film to run with.
So you stole mine.
I'm glad.
I had three other guys listed.
See, you always have like three guys in the cut. If you went first,
because what I'll do is I'll go through it. I'm just reading off my notes, so I'll go through all of them just so I have like everything written down. The first one I wrote down was Chris Duarte, but also like I'm obscenely high.
Don't use them all. You're gonna leave nothing for me. Don't start reading out five names.
No, yeah. I don't think you'll have these guys. Actually, I'm not gonna say the second one because it's a perfect one for you. I think that you'll take it. The last one that I'll have is Raekwon Gray at Florida State. Like I really think that this dude should be somewhere in like that second round range. I don't know if he'll go this year. And honestly, I think that he's probably better off coming back and losing a little bit of weight. Like I think he's a little bit heavy. But I mean, he does everything well. He can pass the ball. He can play off the bounce. He can shoot it a little bit. He's got the size. You can play him. He can guard fours because he's strong enough. I really, really like that dude. And someone said Jason Preston. I actually thought
– terrible today. No, he hurt himself today. I was there.
I was going to say, like, I thought it was the fact that he could not
– 2 games, personally.
Yeah, he could not get around.
Can I tell you, talking to NBA guys that were there today and seeing him in person, and I love him, and I want to love him. Like, his story is amazing. He's a great kid, but he's not a great athlete, and he doesn't shoot it well. And that's a bad combo. You better be one or the other.
I think he actually does shoot it pretty well. I don't think he shoots it well off the dribble. He's off the catch. And to me, the fact that he can play off the ball a little bit is what makes him intriguing because I don't think he's a full-time point. But the fact that he also couldn't get around like Kihei Clark or Virginia's athletes or Creighton's athletes like that.
Mahoney did a good job
posting up. Mahoney did a great job.
Denzel Mahoney.
He's also a monster too. Like that dude is he's a beast. He's a great defender. He's the guy that took away James Bouknight in the Big East. Like he is very, very good.
Love Denzel Mahoney.
All right. this one should be very easy for you. Actually, I'm sorry. You didn't do the player that got paid. What player got paid?
The guy who did this? Am I going with Jim Boeheim's kid? I mean, you got to go with Bob Boeheim here, don't you?
Like, he's like, my MVP of the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, listen. He's got size. and he can shoot the shit out of the ball. Okay. Yeah. So like, if you have that and you're not a disaster defensively, and even if you are, even if you are a disaster,
you might be a disaster defensively.
And your name's Boeheim.
He's in his own.
Somebody's going to throw you a bone. And to me, it's going to have to be the right team, obviously. But a guy's like that, and like this kid is like the best kid in the world. He really is. So, yeah, he will not be a lottery pick, but he can. He can make. I think he's gonna have a chance to make a team just because, again, he shoots shit out of it, and he's so even keel.
Like, shooting makes up for a lot of warts. It makes up for a lot of warts. All right, Goodman, this one is right up your alley. Which coach got paid this weekend?
I mean, Porter. Like, who else? Porter Moses probably.
I got another one. Porter's the obvious one. I got another one.
Yeah, I mean, I think Porter probably gets Marquette. I really do. I think he'll be the next coach at Marquette. I don't have it like inside info yet because they're still going through it, but he's heavy in there right now. And I think he's the guy. He's certainly the guy if I'm at Marquette and I'm hiring Porter Moser. Absolutely.
Yeah. Day, who do you have?
All right. This guy's not going to leave anytime soon, but when it's time to get read up, he'll get paid. I think I'm going with Coach Wayne Tinkle. I mean, he's been there for like six years, and he's had okay seasons. But this season, they win the Pac-12 tournament for the first time in school history. He beats UCLA, he beats the rival Oregon, and he beats Colorado to win the Pac-12. And then he gets to the Sweet 16 against two teams that are like top 20 teams with Tennessee and OK State. Like, he's beating some pretty solid teams to get where he's at right now in the tournament. So I feel like. Granted, I don't know where he's at in his contract, but I feel like he'll be there for a little bit longer because of this run that he's had toward the end of the season.
Yeah, he definitely got himself an extension.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. And that was the guy that I was going to have listed. And Sean he's saying Juwan Howard got himself paid with this tournament. No, Juwan Howard got himself paid with this season.
20 years ago. He got paid 20 years ago.
His bank account is 9 figures. Like,
he's been getting paid. So.
And it doesn't matter. Like, here's the thing with Juwan Howard. Okay, so he could probably go to the NBA next year if he wants to. I'm serious. Like, an NBA team will probably offer him a job after this cycle. But one son is there. Another son is coming. He's not going anywhere. It'll be there for him. It'll probably be there for him in 5 or 6 years. But you coach your kids. Like, that's special. That's something that you'll never have another opportunity to do. I think there'll be the opportunity to coach in the NBA again for Juwan Howard once his kids are out of there.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And yeah, like I said, he got himself paid for this season, not just this tournament, for this season. All right, nice. So Goodman, the next thing that we have, and the way that we're gonna end this, is the All Legends of March team, which is basically the five players or teams or coaches or fans or things from games. Like, we each picked five, right? And it's things that you are going to remember from this first weekend of the tournament for a long time. And I'm gonna let Day start. I'm gonna let you have the first one.
All right. Ben Vanderplas's shoe just exploding on him. While he's playing.
I didn't even see that.
All time funniest shit I've ever seen. While he's playing, his shoe just literally.
Oh my God. Here we go. Good morning. You all thought you were going to bed. The day is time. What time is the first PY game, Goodman?
All right, Fana, real quick. What we're doing here is. We're ending this with our All Legends of March teams. So we're all picking five players, teams, coaches, fans, moments, things that we're going to remember from this first weekend of the tournament for a while. So we'll go around. We'll make you be last on this circle. So think about it a little bit and prepare. Vanderplas's shoe blowing up, which is what I had ever
seen. And then he had to play with two different color shoes, one gray and black. I could not stop laughing during the game.
The best part,
They got kicked in the face.
The best part of it is like they went to TV timeout and like he very clearly had time to change the shoe, but he was like, he's like, nah, I like it different colors. And he just, like, I guarantee he's trying to play it off that like he didn't want to, he didn't have time, he couldn't do it or whatever. No, he just liked that he was wearing two shoes that were different colors. Right. That was so funny, man. If they won, that would have been great. All right, so the first one I have written down is Rod Farva.
Who?
You guys know who Rod Farva is? The guy from Super Troopers.
Super Troopers is.
Because Cam Trutwig looks exactly like Rod Farva, and I could not stop laughing the whole game.
That was one of
like, I swear the whole time I'm watching that, I'm just thinking in my head, like, license and registration, chicken fucker. Boog-ock!
Yo, bro. I have not seen Super Troopers in years.
Oh, classic. Man. Top five favorite movie of mine of all time. So, Rod Farva was number one on my list because I could not stop laughing at that dude. Oh, it was so good. Cam Crutwig, shout out to him, man. What a legend. What a hero. Jeff, you go. You're next.
I mean, for me, you know, it's Abilene Christian's win, being there and watching that and getting a chance to talk to Anthony Pleasant in the stands, you know, former Patriots, Super Bowl winner. You know, we can't talk to the players or coaches, although Joe Golden came damn close to me after that win. He literally came up to me and was ready to like hug me, I think. And I'm like, Joe, no. Like, I don't need you to get kicked out of the bubble here. We want you to be able to play your second round game. But yeah, it was just watching that game, which I thought was like one of the greatest upsets I've ever seen, not because of the number, but because of the talent, because of how the two teams looked on the court. It was like the ultimate David Goliath, right? Abilene had these tiny guards, and even up front, like they had their foreman was like, looked like Fanta. I mean, honestly, the foreman looked like Fanta, and he's going up against like Kai Jones and Jericho Sims, and somehow the dude's like holding his own. So for me, it's Abilene Christian.
All right, Fana, what do you have?
So I have Wayne Tinkle and Oregon State making the Sweet 16, but particularly this storyline. Wayne Tinkle's post-game interview. This was really cool. I don't know if you guys saw this, but
no.
Wayne Tinkle grew up walking the Loyola Chicago halls because his father was the dean of students at Loyola Chicago. And Wayne said to the teacher, the Turner crew, he goes, I feel like my dad is telling me something from upstairs right now because I'm 16 and I'm facing this school that I grew up walking the halls. And, you know, I know in the world, Sister Jean is an amazing thing, but like the plot here that should, like the fact that Wayne Tinkle has gone from dead last in the Conference of Champions, which has lit up this tournament, and now is going to face the school that he grew up walking the hallways of. In what world does Oregon State ever face Loyola Chicago? In this world, it happened. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Dave, what do you got next? That was a good one, Fanta. That was a good one. Dave, what do you got next?
I was going to bring up Sister Jean until one of you guys just said it, so I lost all appeal. I'm going with Colorado's like 10-second brain fart that they got today, where they inbounded the basketball, passed it to each other under the basket three times, and then slowly walked the ball to almost half court before they got a 10-second call. And then they were down 10 at the time, or 12, and then they had a chance to come back in the game, and then they gave up a three, and then they're down 15. It was like I was completely lost at what the hell Colorado was doing.
Dave, can I tell you how happy I am we brought you on this podcast now?
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm happy to be here. No, you guys gave me my first job, so I'm pretty happy.
First job in media.
I was doing nothing.
So no, his first job, period.
Period. This is period.
Yeah. All right. So my next one, you mentioned Abilene Christian. The thing I'm going to remember from that upset more than anything else is the walk-on that did the horns down straight into the camera. That dude was planning that ever since he saw that they drew Texas. You know that dude was planning it because as soon as the buzzer went off, he ran straight to the camera and just did horns down nonstop. It was the only
Everybody time. Plans that when they play Texas. Oh, man, just as soon as you draw Texas, that's like one of the most favorable things to do.
Oh, it was so funny. Like, yeah, that kid, he was trying to do that the whole time. Good for him, man. Good for him. Jeff, what do you got next?
I'm going to use some, like, personal deals because you guys are going to use – I don't want to take some of the ones that you guys have watched, but I'll give you a story. Georgetown game, you know, we have a media section at Hinkle, and I had to take a leak, so I walked to the bathroom. You got to walk past the Georgetown section. All of a sudden, some dude starts yelling at me, turns around, this old guy, Goodman, you suck. You suck. You suck. You suck. Like going after me. And I'm like, I just stand there and take it. Like I'm smiling, but I got a mask on. Like, I wish you could see my smile. Cause I'm like, bring it on, motherfucker. Like, I don't care. And, you got JT3 fired. You suck. You suck. You suck. And I just stood there for a while, and then Georgetown lost by 100. So it wasn't me.
After Georgetown, terrible.
All right, Fanta, what do you got?
Oh, I've got the must bus. Taking the bus onto a table at Hinkle Fieldhouse.
I was there.
If you ask me right now, what is the most intense game? And I think, Jeff, you would be able to reflect in person. You could feel it through the TV. Hinkle's been the best venue. And Arkansas and Texas Tech play at this level that you can't believe they're sustaining the level throughout the game. You combine that with Kevin Harlan calling the game, and it feels like every dribble is massive. That was my favorite game of the weekend in terms of just how much it seemed like it mattered. And it was a round of 32 game.
No, you're right. You're right. That was insane. And Muss's celebrations, they're completely over the top.
Yes.
Completely over the top. Ridiculous. Borderline ridiculous. If they go to the Final Four, like, he's going to take his shirt off. It's going to be disgusting.
He 100% plans all of those things.
Oh, all of it. All 100% of it. He's ready for it. He probably honestly, like, goes through it beforehand. Like, they probably – it's probably like theater.
Can I apply right now? I'm going to put the suggestion in right now. Hey, Big 12 and SEC, can you please set us up for an Arkansas-Texas Tech rematch next year in the Big
12
SEC Challenge? Let's make that happen, because I think Beard and Musselman, that is the best non-conference coaching rivalry.
Beard,
one celebrating and the other one jumping at the refs there.
Did you see Beard waiting? Did they show that on TV at all? While Musselman is doing his whole shtick, Beard is literally standing there waiting for like 3 minutes for him to finish. You could tell like how frustrated he was, but he's like, I'm not leaving until Musselman comes up and I can at least do what I got to do and shake his hand or dab him, whatever he did.
Yeah. Did you see Musselman afterwards on TV? So Todd Furman, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's the gambling guy for CBS Sports. Right. Said on the pregame show, he was like, "This is going to be like the biggest coaching mismatch in NCAA tournament history." And Musk got on like live on CBS afterwards. Like, yeah, there was some guy I've never even heard of him said that this was the biggest coaching mismatch. So, like, how do you like me now?
Now Musk can coach. Musk can coach.
Look, there's a lot of things that you could criticize him for.
Yeah,
his coaching acumen is not one of those things. All right, what do you got next day?
I had a Cameron Crutwick's Goonies sloth from the Goonies celebration after stripping Aya on the side. It was pretty funny to see to see him celebrate that much. Like it was. You never really get a good look at a person's face during the game, and I saw him and immediately thought of that, and I couldn't stop laughing.
So next one I have is the Groves brothers at Eastern Washington. Tanner Groves and Jacob Groves,
just awesome.
Killers, dude. They were so good, and it looked like they had Screech and Tom Hanks from Cat.
That's part.
Yeah, they're just out there giving Kansas buckets nonstop. Now,
I thought they had the chance to win that game too.
They did. They kind of
blew it, bro. I thought they had a chance to win that one.
Whatever, man. Like, look, the Groves brothers are legends. I love those dudes. I hope that they stay in college forever. And I wish that we could take them and put them on another team just so they would still be in the NCAA.
Did you see Pat McAfee's tweet? He goes, these dudes are going to go and destroy the YMCA league in another year. Someone tweeted at him and goes, hey, stay in your lane. He goes, white guys playing at the YMCA getting buckets is my lane. Shout out to Pat McAfee.
All right, Goodman, what do you got next?
I mean, what else? But the Pac-12, baby. I went to Arizona. I'm a Pac-10 guy. Pac-10, okay? But I'm going Pac-12 here. And Pac-12, the greatest conference in college basketball. And nobody – I mean, who's arguing? Anybody want to argue? Big 10, how many teams left? One. Big 12, how many teams left? One. Summit League, how many teams left? One. Pac-12, four, baby. Four. Pac-12 dominance.
Two of them are playing each other next one. We'll see how many is left after that.
All right, what do we got, Fanta? What's next?
Well, I think I'm going to go right off the Pac-12. I just think it's amazing that the first night of this tournament, Mick Cronin and Hep Cronin get to enjoy that moment together. And Hep Cronin has to be on cloud nine right now because he's basically, you know, he's so used to being with his son. And people don't know this side of Mick. They don't see this side of Mick. And I actually think, Jeff and Rob, you'd be better at identifying this. But Mick Cronin came off as this, you know, at Cincinnati, the guy that nobody liked, and he's kind of a little jerk, and Xavier fans only made it worse. And all of a sudden, I've almost think that going to Los Angeles for Mick Cronin has been a good thing for kind of his rep. This is huge for him because the biggest thing was he can't make the NCAA tournament run. It just goes to show you that's such an arbitrary thought because this is the most random thing that we could have predicted that he now is standing in the Sweet 16 after a key injury. I think it's really amazing that he hadn't seen his father for 13 months. It's kind of full circle, right? We've gone through this pandemic. You start to feel normalcy coming back. And part of the normalcy in college basketball is UCLA actually being relevant. They are going to the Sweet 16, and I'm happy for Mick Cronin because
aren't they the only true blue blood? I mean, we can call Villanova blue blood, but like who else is left? Like Duke gone, Kentucky gone, everybody. I mean, Michigan State, like everybody's out now. UCLA Michigan. Is like blue blood left.
Would you consider Michigan? No, I wouldn't even consider Michigan. What am I talking about? Sorry.
I would argue Villanova is a blue blood.
Fine. But they're
your point is well taken. Dave, what's next?
I was just going to talk about how Sister Jean just had the internet on fire the entire Loyola run. Like everyone was talking about Sister Jean and her scouting reports, basically. Oh, so
scouting.
I thought that was hilarious. I thought everybody ran with it. It was two days. Everybody ran with it. It was a fun. It wasn't
nearly as bad as last Final Four. Yeah. You probably weren't here, Day. No. It was out of control because people were there, so they were all talking to her. I was actually like right next to her in a room at Hinkle, and I don't know. I just feel like you know what I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong. But I feel like Sister Jean takes away a little bit from the Loyola accomplishments of the players because so many people focus on her instead of the players. That's just me.
It's a fun story, but it's also kind of like, okay, like we get it. It's Sister Jean. She's a nun. I love basketball. Like, awesome. Great. Yeah. Let's move on. You have a team that can get to a Final Four again from the NBC.
They refuse.
So the only other thing, I wrote down Kevin O'Banner and Max Asmus, but I feel like that's kind of,
easy.
We've gone over. So the last one that I've written down, which like legitimately floored me. I could not stop laughing when he did this is Fran McCaffrey today, second half, they're down by 20. He's sitting there, he's got the mask on, right? And he's sitting there and he's screaming at the officials, just like laying into him with the mask on. And like the camera pans over to him and zooms in on him. And you see him like hair going everywhere, right? And then he goes and he sits down in a huff and he lays down and he pulls the mask off his face and he just screams, fuck, and puts the mask back on. He pulled the mask off his face to scream fuck as loud as he could. and then put the mask right back on. Oh, I was dying.
I feel like you need to as a coach when things aren't going right. You know, you're going to get ousted. It's just like, I'm going to let the referees know how I feel. Like, I'm not letting you walk out of here without letting you know.
He spent a full minute cussing out an official with the mask on, and then goes to the bench, pulls the mask down, yells "fucked," and puts it right back on.
What would you do? Like, if you feel like you're getting a raw deal, granted they weren't, they were just getting destroyed, but still, you're not going to see that referee for another like 5 months or whatever. I'm letting you know what I think about you personally.
All right, Jeff, what do you got?
The Indiana fans. I just think, honestly, in the last week, it's been a love affair with me and the Indiana fans. And
would you say love affair? Like, love
affair. Maybe a love hate.
Love hate. There you go. You
know, these knuckleheads thought they were getting Brad Stevens. They did. And we tried to tell them over and over and over, and they didn't listen. So Brad said it early in the week that he wasn't coming, but he was kind of a little bit lukewarm about how he said it. He didn't come out and say, hey, I'm not going. So I had to, in the middle of a game at Hinkle, which was kind of apropos that it was at Hinkle, and I had to go downstairs and get on the Celtics pregame availability with Brad Stevens. And I know I cover enough Celtics games, so I hit up the PR guy and I said, hey, can I ask the first question? You know, I'm at Hinkle. And he said, no problem. So I asked the first question, and it was basically, hey, Brad, like, what are the chances you go to Indiana? And he basically said that I'm not going. And then he went on to call himself. He basically said, hey, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm a 44-year-old masshole who drives crazy. I go to Dunkin' Donuts and I root for the Patriots. So I tweeted that. And man, and then since I've tweeted, you know, Paul Mills should be the next coach. Like, I'm just screwing with these fans now and having fun with the Indiana fans. And they don't really like me. And then I tweeted the picture of me and Thad Mata. Like, it couldn't have worked out better with Thad Mata being at the game today. And he was so good about it. I'm like, Thad, we got to take a picture. I got to be able to screw with the Indiana fans. He's like, yeah, no problem. Let's do it.
That is amazing. That's
awesome. That comment was great. Shawn Michaels bringing the heat. Did you see that day? Hold on, let me bring it back up.
Oh, wow.
Play it again. That was awesome.
This is the VCR of today's technology. Yo, he's been on fire today. He's been on fire today. I'm not gonna lie. It's been amazing today.
That's big time. That's big time.
We need him back here for the next.
All right. Fana, give us one more and bring us home. And
here we go, baby. Here we go. Okay. All right. Good evening, everybody. I was told Villanova was in trouble. They were going to lose to Pat Kelsey and Winthrop. There's the VU coach, Jay Wright, tweet. Pat, thanks so much for your time. Have a nice night. And then they face North Texas, and they throw the mean green back to Texas. All I'm going to say is this, in addition to that, that's Villanova. I'm not that surprised. I will say this. Underlying storyline of the opening weekend, yes, they beat two teams that they should beat, but – people at Creighton and in Omaha expect the program to be Final Four type conversation. Creighton has never made it to the second weekend of the tournament since this structure was put into place. The Creighton Blue Jays have not been one of the final 16 teams standing in the NCAA tournament since 1974. And I will cap it off with this. What Greg McDermott said 3 weeks ago is terrible, wrong, inexcusable, unacceptable, all those things that we have discussed. Our own Jim Hens Manigat talked about Greg and talked about the different variables of this situation. And I can tell you guys, I've been on every Greg McDermott availability, and you guys know Greg. And Greg McDermott, throughout every media availability, and his kids have talked about the fact that Greg was wrong in every aspect. But that Greg's ownership has shown. And in no way does it make it right. It doesn't. It's inexcusable. I will say this. I've seen a man that comes through genuine and that comes through apologetic. He has work to do, but it says a lot about his kids, his players. It says a lot about those kids that they went through what they went through. I don't know how I would respond as a player. Those players have responded, and I want to congratulate Marcus Zagorowski, Damian Jefferson, Denzel Mahoney, Mitch Ballack. Those kids stuck together. And in a world where we have disruption and nobody sticks together, I'm going to credit those Creighton kids. They're going to the Sweet 16 for the first time in school history. Congratulations to those kids. They have a next to impossible task against Gonzaga, but I think that'll be a fun game to watch. And for the Blue Jays, this is historic.
That was my number five, Fanner. That was my number five, Fanner. That was perfect, bro.
Did you guys see the celebration in the locker room afterwards, the video they put out?
Yeah.
No, that was good.
That was a good one. Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, everyone, and Goodman, everyone was involved. Everyone on the team
was in there. That's good. Now, I talked to Greg's wife before the game, and obviously I know Marcus Zagorowski's parents well, Mandy and Zach, and it was interesting talking to Lisa. I didn't talk to her for long, but you could tell. I mean, it's obviously affected the family big time. And listen, if it was a pattern, that's one thing. You know, if it's a pattern, okay, you know what? He's gone. But it wasn't a pattern. And it was like, I don't want to get into it, but it was obviously a huge mistake. And like you said, Fanta, he's owned up to it. And, you know, ultimately it's cool that these players have done something that hasn't been done there in so long.
Facts.
So long.
Yep.
That's the team to do it too. So this is a good team.
Yeah, it'll be fun. That game actually, all right. Before we get off, can we give us the one game? You might have already done this. Game we're most looking forward to in the Sweet 16, what it is?
I picked the Creighton game.
I picked Creighton Gonzaga. I took Florida State, Michigan. You guys got anything else?
I was going to go Creighton Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. I just think, like, if Creighton's making their shots, and Gonzaga didn't look dominant today. They did not look dominant against an Oklahoma team that didn't have their second best player.
I disagree.
Okay, I was there. They didn't look dominant.
That first half was.
Austin Reeves played his ass off.
Okay, Brady Manick was like 1 for 10 from the field. They had nothing else.
Yeah, nothing else, bro.
And why?
Because Devion Harmon had COVID. That's why.
How about just for a moment, just reflect off that, Jeff, and guys. The Creighton Gonzaga line is like 13.5 right now.
Ooh.
Meanwhile, I'm just sharing this. Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile,
let me take a step back.
I will say, I'm a little bit surprised at this. I was surprised to see the Baylor Villanova line is only 6.
Yeah, I agree. Whoa, only 6?
That's
right. Baylor could honestly. So I saw that game. That's what I fell in love with Baylor for the first time, by the way. A year and a half ago in Myrtle Beach, I saw Baylor play Villanova.
Remember we did a Skype interview with you down in Myrtle Beach?
Yes. I was in, I was getting lunch right on the beach inside, and we had the background of the beach. Absolutely. I do remember that. That game was awesome, and I'm telling you, that's when I fell in love with Baylor. I'm looking for
what? Colin Gillespie had 27 points in that Myrtle championship game against Baylor. He was the best player on the floor for Nova. Yep. I'm just wondering how Jay Wright, and if anyone can do it, it's Jay, but Jay's going to have to limit the possessions. I just don't know how Chris Archidiakono and Caleb Daniels are handling Teague and Mitchell and everything Baylor throws at you. This is a mighty, mighty challenge for Nova, but I give Nova credit. I mean, I'm with you guys. I'm one of the people. I did not know how they were going to piece anything together this weekend, and they won both games by double digits.
I'm curious. Go ahead, Dave. Which one is a mightier task? I mean, I feel like Villanova's is actually a little bit more of an uphill battle than Creighton's. I feel like if Creighton comes out and shoots the ball well, they got a really good chance of beating them.
They do.
The only problem that worries me about Creighton is that obviously they have their four wings and guards that will be on the perimeter. Kristen Bishop isn't the type of guy that's going to catch the ball in the post and put any pressure on Drew Timmy, but he is going to ball screen and roll his ass to the basket and hopefully get lobs or catches and swings and stuff like that. So I just wonder what kind of pressure they can put on the bigs, because that's where they're like susceptible to lose that.
Yep, one thing Nova's done when they have pulled off a shocker. Last year, they played Kansas at Wells Fargo. Kansas was a better team at the time. Nova won the game by a point. Yeah. You know what Jay Wright did? He said he went Rolly Massimino. He took the air out of the ball. He took the shot clock down to 10 every possession, and he said, then we'll move, and we'll get a high percentage three.
Okay.
But I'm shocked, honestly. Like, this Villanova team is still – they beat Winthrop in North Texas. I don't know how they compete with Baylor's backcourt. If there's anybody that can do it, it's them. But I would give Creighton more of a shot just because I think Creighton's got more firepower.
What I would say to that, Fanta, is what I expect Villanova to do is play. I don't know how much the Chris Archidiakono is going to play. I think they'll go with Justin Moore kind of at the one, but then just run everything through Jeremiah Robinson Earl again and try and dare them to put Flo Thamba or JTT on him at the five. And I think what will happen is then the move that Scott Drew will do is then put Mark Vital on Jeremiah Robinson Earl, and I think that would be a tougher matchup. But then you're looking at a situation where you're going to have four guards. And I think that what Villanova can do then is find a mismatch somewhere. Whoever Matthew Meyer is guarding or whoever Macy Oteague is guarding, try to get them in a situation where you can kind of get them going against a closeout or something like that. So I think that there are ways to do it, especially with the way that Jeremiah Robinson Earl is playing. But that's a tough matchup. And then – so my take – Dave, I told you this before. My take on Creighton Gonzaga is Gonzaga – and Creighton basically do the same things and want to play the same way, but Gonzaga has the better player at every single position. Go to the list. Go to the list and tell. Like we went through.
I already got castrated while I was on here. That the group did not. They were not happy with me.
I did not like when Day said he'd take Marcus Zagorowski over Jalen Suggs.
I was like, for what Marcus Zagorowski does for his team versus like what they expect. What they expect from the top two scorers for Gonzaga to do for the team, Jalen Suggs isn't one of the top two scorers. So Zagorowski has more opportunity to go out there and be more aggressive because that's what he does for his team.
You know, that's the problem with Zagorowski. Honestly, I don't think he's selfish enough.
He's not selfish enough, but he also is their leading scorer. And if he needed to be, I feel like he would go that route. Like I just feel like with their team, they have four to five guys that are going to average double figures. Yes. Zagorowski is the catalyst.
Right. Goodman, real quick, we've had like seven questions about it. Can you just let people know like what happened with Thad and like what happened there?
Thad Matta. It was an incorrect report that Thad Matta got hired and failed the physical. and Spike put it out. So I asked that. I literally asked that, and he's like, no, it's complete BS. So, hey. Did you guys see – I have to tell you this because it was classic. Did you see the tweet? So I put out a tweet when I went to Purdue the other night about the statue of Robbie Hummel. Did you guys see
that? I didn't see that. No.
So I put out sources. I put out sources. Robbie Hummel's statue is in the works here at Mackey. Likely spot is immediately next to this one of Wooden. And there's a statue of John Wooden out front there. So the best part of it. Guess who responds? There's a head coach of a team that is still in the Sweet 16 right now and a top head coach. This is what he responds. Love this. Let's go. Robbie. He was super excited about it. Completely fell for the Robbie Hummel statue.
There's no chance. I'm going to give
each one of you a guess. Dave, I'll start with you because Doster, I think, already knows.
I know the answer. You guys are going to be laughing.
Which coach texted that in the group text to me and Robbie?
I'm going with Nate Oates. I'll take my L.
Wait, you're off. It's one of the 16 still remaining?
Correct. Yes.
I'll go Scott Drew.
Yes.
Scott Drew.
You did it.
Scott's a nice guy. That's why I went for it.
And the other nice coach, dude. The other Robbie told me, I saw him today. He was doing the game, the two games tonight. I said, you get any other texts? Yeah, Bryce Drew also.
The whole Drew family.
Yeah. The connection there is that they're Robbie so grew up in Valpo and was a huge Valpo fan. And obviously the Drew connection to Valpo.
Love it.
I love the comment. The guy said that the Robbie Hummel statue have stitches on his neck.
Exactly. That's ridiculous. Have you been checking out the comments in general, though? They've been talking about, because we were talking about Blue Bloods a second ago. These guys they've been going crazy. They're making this is a joke about the new Blue Bloods who haven't won any championships but just good teams because people are mad that Michigan isn't considered a Blue Blood.
They're not.
They're going in right now.
Lopez, UConn is definitely a Blue Blood. And with that, we will end the stream.
Oh, my gosh. There we go. Yeah, I bet. I bet.
Hey, Fitz, that's another reaction. Do me a favor. I want you to list out all of the college basketball programs that have won four national titles since 1999. And go.
I love we started at 99. Such a great year.
No, look. No, there's no question. Briefly, I'll make this clear. There's no question when people ask me, and this is easy. If you people say, so after Villanova, like who in the Big East could make the deepest run for a national title? There's no question who it is. It is the UConn Huskies, and they are well on their way back. They're bringing in a top 10 recruiting class, and Dan Hurley has things in the right direction. Let me give you one very brief Dan Hurley story from Big East Tournament Week. UConn is marching up the floor against Creighton. Okay? They are not at the timeline. No, excuse me. Creighton is coming up the floor against UConn. Creighton has not even passed half court. You know on Twitter when there's those tweets, no one, colon, and there's no words, and then it's, in this instance, it's Dan Hurley. Dan Hurley, in a silent Madison Square Garden, 3 seconds! There's not one person in the painted area. Stu Jackson is on the other side of the court. Stu Jackson, Senior Associate Commissioner of Big East Men's Basketball. Stu! How did crew get hired in
I heard Dan Hurley was mellow. Somebody said
Really cool. He's really cool. He could get nuts, but he's really cool. I used to play against him in high school. He would yell from time to time, but like he's always chill. he's probably developed this new I'm going nuts manner though over the years. I haven't seen him in a while.
His dad, man.
It's crazy. What a great weekend, though. What a great weekend. Goodman, I'm jealous.
Great weekend.
Fun. I mean, I tweeted out it's been 18 games in 101 hours that I've seen. 18 games in 101 hours. And to be honest, I would have done all eight today and yesterday, but the NCAA, David damn it, Warlock, let me see eight games next time. Bullshit. Complete bullshit.
There's no way.
Trying to hold the man down. That's what you're doing, Warlock.
There's no way Warlock is watching this right now. But anyway, if anyone's still watching this right now, I just want to let you guys know that tomorrow we are dropping an unbelievable episode of 68 Shining Moments that Goodman recorded with Scott Drew, Paul Mills, the head coach at Oral Roberts, Jerome Tang, and Matt Driscoll, who are all on the same staff at Baylor back in the day when it was – when Baylor, like in 2003, when Baylor was just getting started, and the stories, they are unbelievable.
Can't wait.
Right?
How
good?
I was honestly like, you were like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever done, and I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like Goodman has a propensity to kind of hype things up a little bit, but I listened. Like I swear, I was laughing the whole time. So
make sure you download
that tomorrow. Subscribe to that feed. Go check it out. It is awesome. Thank you for hanging out with us. This was fun. We're gonna have to do this more often.
Why am I never invited on this? I had a surprise.
It's our show. We got a show going here.
No, this is bullshit.
This is where we do business at, Jeff.
We're bringing Fanta back.
And bringing Fanta back. Fanta's definitely got to come back. I'll listen to Fanta all the time. I love Fanta. I love Fanta. What?